Maybe we'll read just a few verses just before we begin from Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us, that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest or clear as I ought to speak. And we trust that God will bless us reading from his word. Last year I spoke at an Echoes conference in Northern Ireland, and afterwards I was speaking with one of the missionaries, who's a doctor out in Zambia, and as he was showing his slides and showing some of the work that he's doing out in a much more difficult kind of a place than I am, I said to him, I said, when I think of myself in Ireland with all our modern conveniences, I said, I don't really feel like I'm a real missionary. And he turned it around and he said, well, you know, most of what I do is just, you know, working with sick patients. He says, I don't feel like I'm a real missionary. He feels like he was just acting like a doctor. But again, listening even this morning to the letter that we read from a sister in Zambia, and my purpose really this afternoon is to try and encourage prayer for Ireland, and yet we know that there are places all over the world that are desperately in need of prayer. Missionaries who are in need of prayer, our local assemblies here that are needing prayer, families that need our prayers, and we need to continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. And as I say, my responsibility this afternoon is to tell you primarily about Ireland. That's the area that I have been now for the last 7 years. And I will take just a moment or two to talk about Kilkenny and Waterford first of all. My desire actually, it's the challenge that I've had over the last couple of weeks, because I've been doing reports in various places, and knowing that I was going to be speaking at the Kenilworth Missionary Prayer Meeting and that I was going to be speaking here, and knowing that a lot of the people would be hearing the same reports, that I didn't want to be saying the same things everywhere. So in most of those reports, I've focused on the work in Kilkenny and in Waterford, and I thought that today I would try and give a broader picture of the work in general in the Republic of Ireland. But we have been in Kilkenny for the last 7 years, and one of the things that I had felt when we first went to Ireland, that I was not a pioneer missionary, that I didn't feel that I could go into an area where nothing existed and try and see something new established there, and had gone out with the idea that we would be going to help an existing work. I don't consider myself to be primarily an evangelist, although we've been involved quite a bit and have been stretched in the area of evangelism since we've been in Kilkenny, but had gone with the idea that I was going to help them in the area of teaching and ministry. But it is one of the things that really has been exciting to me as we've been there, because the folks in Kilkenny are enthusiastic about their faith. They're keen on sharing the gospel with other people. And as I say, it has challenged and encouraged and stretched me probably more than any other area. And I've enjoyed it. It is, as Floyd said earlier, it is so rewarding when you are working with unbelievers and seeing the joy, seeing the enthusiasm, seeing the growth that takes place within their lives. But again, because I tend more to that area of teaching and pastoral work, again, I want to see them not just saved, I want to see them coming into the assembly and growing and maturing and taking on responsibilities. But we were seeing good progress in the work there in Kilkenny. There are two local brethren who serve as elders and are doing a good job, and have really progressed well over the last couple of years, taking on more and more responsibility. And more we just felt that it would be beneficial for the assembly if we left. Normally that shouldn't be a good thing if someone is leaving the assembly, but we felt for the sake of development of spiritual gift and amongst the local believers that it would be beneficial to them if we were to leave. And about 2 years ago we had begun praying about where we would go. And part of my thought was that I wanted to be close enough to Kilkenny where we could still be of some help to them, but where they wouldn't be necessarily dependent upon us. And Waterford is only about 35 miles from Kilkenny. Kilkenny is a city of about 25,000 people and has seen tremendous blessing both in the assembly as well as in a large evangelical Presbyterian work that has been done there in Kilkenny. Waterford is a city of about 70,000, so about three times the size of us, but would have very little of any solid evangelical work that is being done there. And we really felt that there was an opportunity. And we have been blessed over the past number of years with teams that have come to help us during the summer. They have been a real blessing, and I would encourage you, if you have time to be able to give to something like that, one of the advantages of going to Ireland is that they speak English, a little differently than here, but they speak English. And I know that there are some mission teams where people go out and it is more of a maybe construction or practical hands-on kind of work, and I know that an important need is being met by that. But when you come to Ireland, you have an opportunity to be involved in evangelism directly. And I know it has been a help and an encouragement to a number of the people who've come, who maybe haven't done a whole lot before they had gone, and have been, had opportunities in a place where nobody knows them, to go out and talk with people on the streets. The Irish people generally are very friendly, very open, and they will give you a listen to anyway. They might not agree with you, but they'll listen to you, and generally they're quite friendly, particularly in the smaller towns like we are in Dublin. They're so busy that they are going to pass you by and not give you the time of day quite as much, but I know they've had good opportunities there too. But we had taken some of these teams down to Waterford couple of years ago, and saw that there seemed to be an openness and a responsiveness to the gospel there. And we've also had teams that have come down from Northern Ireland to help us. And one of the young men that came down on one of those first teams really became burdened about helping with that work. He's been commended by his assembly and is now living down in Waterford. He fellowships with us at the moment in Kilkenny until we see a work established there in Waterford. And then about just over a year ago, Tim and Linda Hood, who had been working with Garnet and Gwen Cooney in the western part of Ireland, more near Limerick, they have moved over to Waterford as well. And so every Wednesday evening, we have an evangelistic Bible study in their home. On Sunday evenings, we're having outreach meetings in a local hotel. And Tim is very active in street preaching and door-to-door. Matt is tremendous working with young people, and I try and help them however I can. And it has been good to be able to have a little team working together, and as I say, the Hoods would come up to Kilkenny at this point as well. But our hope is that in the near future we would see enough of a nucleus established. We don't want it to be a nucleus of commended missionaries in order to establish assembly. We want to see local people saved. There are several that have made professions of faith, but we'd like to see a few more, and particularly a few men we would like to see saved. There's three ladies that have made professions of faith, a number of men that are coming regularly to the Bible studies, and so we do have great hope and prayer that God will continue to do that work there. So we do value your prayers for the work in Kilkenny and in Waterford in general. But as I say, I want to try and give you an overview of the entire work, and I'll see if I can figure out if I'm doing this right. But Ireland today. Okay, assessing the need numerically. Ireland has about 4 million people that live there. There's a lot of young people and good opportunities for working with the young people. We'll talk about them a little bit more. Let me try and show you the map here. You'll notice that the light-colored area up in the top is Northern Ireland. I remember before we went to Ireland, I was probably fairly ignorant. I had seen bumper stickers here in New Jersey that said 26 plus 6 equals 1, and I could never figure out that math. But in Northern Ireland, there are 6 counties. In the Republic of Ireland, there are 26 counties. And a Republican over in Ireland is someone who wants to see all 32 gathered together as one Republic. But at the moment, Northern Ireland is still part of Great Britain, and, or, sorry, of the United Kingdom, and the South is a separate entity. In Northern Ireland, well, we'll see this on the, I think I have a thing here. This is a census that was done in 2002. At this point, they were saying that 88% of the Republic of Ireland would claim to be Roman Catholic. Now, that's a decline from what had previously been. I think it has historically been 95 to 97% Roman Catholic. But in recent years, what I think you've seen is a greater diversity in general, in part because we are starting to see as Ireland has grown in prosperity, there have been people coming in looking for work, people from Eastern Europe and people from many of the African nations have come as well. And so they're seeing some diversity that hadn't been there previously. But I think what is more significant even than that is you'll notice down at the bottom is the no religion or not stated. And that is an area that I think is growing quite significantly in the Republic of Ireland, is that people are giving up on religion in general. Many people would still be nominally Christian, and yet, let me see, going the wrong way here. Yes, this you'll see in 1974, 91% of the population would have attended Mass regularly. In 1999, it was down to 57%. So there has been a significant decrease in Mass attendance. And again, it would just be more guessing than anything else why you've seen that kind of a change. I think part of it has been some of the scandals that have taken place in the Roman Catholic Church that have caused a great deal of disillusionment amongst people. But you've also seen, just as there has been growing prosperity, that people have less and less time and need for God, at least in their perception. In the South, with a population of just over 4 million, there are 26 assemblies that are listed in the Assemblies Address Book, 5th edition, but three newer assemblies are not included in that, and hopefully we'll be able to add Waterford to that before too long as well. By contrast, in Northern Ireland, there's about 1.7 million people that live there, with about 40% who would be Roman Catholic. But there are 172 assemblies in those six counties in the north. So there is quite a disparity between the two countries. I remember when I first began thinking and praying about going to Ireland, and I had spoken with a brother from Northern Ireland, and I was saying to him, well, why with all of these Christians and all of these assemblies in Northern Ireland, why is there a need for me to come from North America to do this missionary outreach? Where are the people from the north? Why aren't they coming down? And he felt at that point that I would probably have better acceptance as a North American because of some of the cultural, political issues that divide the two countries. But I think that some of that is breaking down. I think some of it has been problems in perception among some in the assemblies in Northern Ireland as well. And one of the great encouragements to us has been some of these teams that have come down from the north, seeing the burden that they are getting for the work in the south, and that they have been a tremendous help to us altogether. I want to talk about some of the opportunities that are available in Ireland, and I say that there are great opportunities that are there, just as there are in many other places, and I say we would love to have more people helping us in Ireland, but we know that there are places that are in need of help too, and so obviously we have to look to the Lord for guidance in all of these things. But amongst children's work, there are good things that are happening and good opportunities that are there. Noel and Liza McMeekin run the Postal Bible School. They took that over about 10 years ago. They had about 800 students that were receiving lessons every month through the post. And for those who know a little bit more about the work in Ireland, Bert Gray, I believe, was the man who was responsible for starting that work some years ago, and he is now actively involved in trying to get the work extended out into Eastern Europe as well, and that is also a worthy work that is in need of prayer too. But they took over about 10 years ago with 800 students every month that they were posting these lessons out to. Now they would have about 4,500 students that they mail the lessons to each month. So it has been a tremendous growth in the workload, certainly, but also in the opportunity. And each month these children are getting Bible lessons that are gospel-oriented. They fill out the lessons, and then they send them back into the office. The office then sends them out to volunteer graders. I think they have about 400 people who help with grading these lessons. Then they come back into the office, and they're sent out again to the students. Right now, they're in the midst of their prize-giving season, where they travel around to 45 different locations around the country, giving prizes to all of these students. It gives them an opportunity to meet the children, to meet their parents, that they give them beautiful prizes that are given to them, and it gives them an opportunity to have a gospel message given to those families and to all that are there. A lot of them are using them through the schools as well, and so it's been a tremendous opportunity that's there. The National Bible Study Club would be a similar kind of thing on a smaller scale. Penny DeFau, that some of you know, and Eric Davis are involved in that ministry, and that has been a tremendous help and an encouragement as well. There are also camps that are going on during the summer, as in many places. Still not the same opportunities that you would have here. Postal Bible School runs a camp that we help with in the summertime, and I say they send out invitations to these 4,000 plus students, and they can only take 90 of them for a week. So they say that during the prize givings, they tell them, as soon as you get your application, return it the same day or you're not going to get in. And they don't. It fills up within a day of them sending them out. So there's a great opportunity there, a great interest in those, and it's been a real help. Most assemblies are involved in various kinds of Sunday school and kids club work as well. One of the things that I didn't put on here and probably should have as well is that Colin Sheldon and some others have been involved, and Tim Hood now is doing it as well, of going into some of the schools with a program called Bible Explorers. And this has been a tremendous opportunity to get into the schools. I think it's been very difficult in the past to get into the schools. Most of the schools are going to be Catholic schools or Protestant schools. Protestant schools are Church of Ireland, and they will only accept their Protestant teachers to come in for that. And most people have found it very difficult to get any entrance into the schools at all. But through this Bible Explorer, they have now had opportunities to be in many schools, and I've been through the training as well. I haven't had any opportunity to get into any of the schools yet. Would love an opportunity in the Kilkenny area to be able to do that, so it is something that we would value prayer for as well. It's broken up into two segments that you have to go through a training program for. First, you have to do the Old Testament, and then when you've taught the Old Testament 10 times, then you can go and get the training for the New Testament as well. So it is a good opportunity for children's work, and we do value prayers for all of that. The youth work is something that I think is a tremendous opportunity as well that is there right now. And it's an area that I don't always feel comfortable in. I don't always feel that I relate well to young people, even though I was young once myself too. It's been, there is a tremendous openness that's there. When we've had teams that have been around, and when we have people that are doing sketchboard, open-air preaching, generally you will find that it's the young people who are willing to come up and talk. You find in Ireland that old people are pretty set in their ways, that they've been in their religion for many, many years, and they're very reluctant to change. But the young people, when you're there in the streets, they're going to come up to you and they're going to talk to you. Now, many times they're going to be making fun. They're looking just to get a little bit of crack, as they say, out of it. Not the drugs that you have here, but have a little bit of fun. And, you know, they like to be able to interact with you there. This young man from Northern Ireland, Matt Wright, has a tremendous rapport with young people. He's got a magnetic personality with them. And what we have found is that these young people are questioning everything. That although they have grown up in a nominally religious country where they've gone through a school system that has taught them religion. When you're going through the school systems there, the priest will be coming in, and they're going to have communion and confirmation, and all of these things will be done in the school. There's been things that I've learned about that I had no idea about. I remember one night we were visiting with a couple, and the people, certainly in the Kilkenny area, I don't think it's quite as bad in some other areas, but Kilkenny particularly, they don't pronounce the TH sound. And there was a lady that I was talking with, and she was telling me about how she remembered when she was a child that the priest would come into the school every winter. And she says they would go around for the blessing of the troat. And I had no idea what a troat was. And she says, yes, he would come in and he would put the two candles up to your troat. And it was so that you wouldn't get sore throats during the winter season. But that's the kind of thing that the Catholic school would have that, or the Catholic religion would have access to the schools in that way. But the young people have been questioning everything, and generally nobody has answers for them. I was talking with a 13-year-old girl last summer, and we asked her if she believed in God. And she said, my religion teacher told me there's no God. Now, if that's what the religion teacher in the Catholic school is teaching them, that there really is a spiritual vacuum that is there in their lives. And we find that when you get out there and you talk with them and you can show them some good reasons, give them some resources, they're willing to think. I know Matt particularly has found that when he's talking with some of these young people, he finds that they are reading stuff that he never would have read when he was that age. I certainly never read. But these young people, these teenagers, are reading Nietzsche and all of this deep philosophical kind of material. They're looking for answers. They're looking for meaning. They're looking for a hope in their lives, and they're not finding it. And when someone comes along who is able to show them the truth from God's word, they're at least willing to listen and to think about it. And they're deep thinkers, but we need to make sure that we are adequately equipped to be able to answer that. I've mentioned to some people on some of the talks that I've given, we have found quite helpful some of the materials that Ray Comfort has produced through Living Waters Ministries, I think they call it. But he has some very helpful things. He has a little booklet called The Atheist Test, and it really is quite humorous, and the young people really enjoy that. He has these little cards that you can carry in your wallet that are intelligence tests, and the young people respond very well to those kinds of things. And some of it is very American, so we have to kind of filter through what we use. But one of the things that I appreciate about his approach is that he uses very much the law as a tutor to bring people to Christ. And it uses virtually every one of his tracts has some reference to the Ten Commandments on it, showing people that they are sinners, that they're guilty before God. And he says it's not just a matter of telling people this will make your life better, but to be able to help them understand that they are in serious trouble before God. But as in many Western countries, we find that when there no answers are being provided for them, they are turning to fill that void within their hearts and lives with alcohol and drugs and sex. And alcohol is a huge problem in Ireland. It's very much, has always been a part of the Irish culture. I remember talking shortly after we arrived there. I went in at Christmas time to the little local shop that we would buy our milk and bread in. And the man offered me a bottle of wine as a Christmas gift. And I politely declined his offer. I told him that I didn't drink. And so he gave me a tin of biscuits or cookies instead. And a few months later, I was back in there one morning. It was a Saturday morning, and when I greeted him, he just kind of grunted at me. And I said, well, you know, that wasn't very convincing. And he said, well, he says, you know, I was out last night, and had a hangover that morning. He wasn't feeling too good. And he says, now, you don't drink at all. And I said, you know, my mother warned us when we were small. She said she had an uncle that was an alcoholic. You might have a weakness there, and you're better to stay away from it, and you don't need it. And so he says, oh, well, you've seen the bad side of it then. And then he said, well, come to think of it, there's not really a good side to it. But he says, in Ireland, he says, everything ends in the pub. If you go to a sports match, then you go back to the pub. If you go to a funeral, you end up at the pub. If you go to a baptism, you end up at the pub. No matter what you do, you end up back at the pub. And that's, their whole life has surrounded around that. But as this increased prosperity has come into the country, they have a lot more disposable income. And these young people who have had this, at least what was there is a structure in their life, for some kind of decency and morality, that's been taken away from them, and they have nothing. And one of the big problems that they have is binge drinking amongst young teens. where they would say that on a Friday and Saturday night, 13-year-olds who would be regularly brought in passed out with alcohol blood counts that are lethal within them, and that they have no clue what the problem is. They don't know how to deal with this at all. And they were discussing it in the local newspaper in Kilkenny, and they were saying, well, it's because we don't have a bowling alley. Well, other towns in Kilkenny have bowling alleys and still have the same problem. And we took it as an opportunity in Kilkenny, and none of us feeling particularly well able for that. We had invited Chuck Ebron, who has a background in some of the rescue missions in this country and has a real burden for drug and alcohol issues. We invited him to come down. We were able to get him into some of the local schools, and he was able to preach the gospel in some of the high schools in Kilkenny. And so we took a problem and tried to make something positive out of it and use it as an opportunity. We also had Chuck out on the streets. And if you've never seen Chuck before, Chuck is a rather large fellow. He's about 6'10" and 350 pounds. And he makes a statement just standing there. I'm told that years ago when he first went to Northern Ireland, they had never really seen a black person there before. And he knocked on someone's door, and when she opened the door and saw him, she just screamed and ran. She just didn't know what to make of this. But, we had an opportunity there that we used. But it is a huge problem. I don't know if you can see these statistics here. but you'll notice in 1985, this is liters of pure alcohol per person 15 years and older. And in Ireland, it went in 1985 from 10.5 liters to where it's now 16.6. Most other countries have been declining while Ireland has been rising. So this drink really is a huge problem that they have over there. But we know that the answer to it is not alcohol rehabilitation. The issue is that they need Christ. They need someone that is going to satisfy that deep hunger and thirst that's within their souls. When we first arrived in Ireland, most of the work that we had done had been primarily with adults. And for this reason is that I was always afraid of dealing with teenagers. Because if you're dealing with teenagers, what response are you going to get from the parents? And I know even a couple of years ago, it was at Christmas time, and we were handing out tracts. And it's so remarkable that, you know, you're standing down in they have a big square in the center of Waterford. And, They were playing Christmas carols out into the square. And you stand there, and the gospel is so clearly presented in some of those Christmas carols that are being played. And people are just oblivious to it. And I was talking with these three teenage girls there they had their shopping bags with them, but apparently they were waiting for their mother. And when the mother arrived and heard me talking with these girls, she was irate that, you know, I'd be talking to her children. Actually, one time when Tim Hood and I years ago were doing some doors in Kilkenny, and normally when we knock on somebody's door, if a child answers the door, you ask, "Are your parents home?" And that's what we did. This 12-year-old boy came to the door. We said, "Are your parents home?" And he said, "No." So we shared the gospel with him. Well, apparently his older sister, 16 or 18 or something, was upstairs. And after a few minutes, she came down in a rage, and she was so angry at us. And she says, "First you make sure his parents aren't home, and then you try and proselytize him." And it hadn't been our intention, but she had misunderstood what we were trying to do. But that had always been some of my concern in dealing with teens. But now we've just forgotten about that, and we just preach the gospel to anyone that you have an opportunity to. But most of what we have done has been with adults. We have done quite a bit of door-to-door work, and statistically, I would say I have very little to show for the work that we have done, and yet I say it's done me a world of good, talking with people. I would have to say that most of my knowledge of evangelism was book knowledge before we went to Ireland, that a lot of it was stuff that I had read in books on evangelism, on how to evangelize. And there were times when I would read and people would say, "Well, this is some of the things that they'll say." And I just couldn't imagine that people would really say some of those things that they said that they would say until I actually heard them saying those things to you. But people just really don't have a grasp of things. And generally, as I say, people in Ireland are mostly polite. Mostly you're not going to get the door slammed in your face. People will be polite. What we have used quite a bit, because I honestly found it very difficult when we first started going door to door. We just had tracts that we were handing out, and I would didn't know what to say when I got to somebody's door, and I would say, "Oh, we're handing out tracts or Christian literature today," and they'd say, "Okay, thank you," and they'd close the door, and I just had difficulty getting a conversation going. I'm not by nature an outgoing kind of a person that finds it easy to talk to strangers. So we developed a survey that we've used quite a bit, particularly in the door-to-door work, basically just asking them about their religious beliefs, and we usually fly through it. We tell them it'll just take 2 minutes to do this survey, 8 or 9 questions that we run through very quickly, multiple choice. When you get down to the last question, it's an open-ended question. And you work through kind of their basic beliefs, and then ending up with, do you believe in life after death? Do you believe that you're going to be going to heaven? Which most of them hope so. And then what are you depending on to get to heaven? And that's the open-ended question. What are they depending on to get to heaven? And I had gone to Ireland with the idea that I was going to have to study quite intensively and know and understand Catholic doctrine and to be well acquainted with it, and found that most Catholics don't know about the Catholic doctrine. And the key issue that we find over and over again is that it's about being a good person. And I've actually even noticed a slip in the standard, that it's moved from actively doing good works to, as long as you don't do harm to your neighbor, that then you're okay. And the question that we most often would respond with then, well, is, if you can get into heaven by being a good person, then why did Jesus die? And people just had no answer to that. And we've developed a tract that we use quite a bit because it addresses that issue, that people need to know and to understand the purpose. You know, the crucifix is central to what Roman Catholics are doing and believing, but they don't understand the purpose for it all. And so we try and address that issue particularly. And I do feel that the whole nature of questions is very valuable for that, because you're finding out where people are, you're understanding what they're thinking, and to be able to address the answers that they're asking, and not just telling them what you think that they need to hear. Obviously, it has to be biblically based. But we would do a lot with literature distribution. There's a brother in Dublin, Eric Davis, that has a small printing press, and he does 2-color tracts for us at cost, and we would get 5,000 printed up at a time. And again, we have tried for the most part to use our own tracts, at least in Kilkenny, because a lot of other very attractively done tracts have, you know, printed in the United States, or that they're in England, and we just want to take away any barriers and try and make it a little bit more Irish. We try and make some reference to Ireland somewhere in it, but not to, so, you know, we don't have St. Patrick's and all of that all over it, but we just, you know, try and have it with a gently Irish flavor to it. We've also used calendars quite a bit. And again, because there is at least a nominal religious feeling there, people are generally quite happy to have a scripture calendar. And again, we believe that the Word of God has the power, if it can get up on their walls, that they will read it and the Lord can use it. Last year, Tim had ordered 12,000 calendars that we distributed around Waterford, and we're hoping to up that, because we didn't get to all of the homes this past year. We're talking about trying to develop our own, again, to give it a slightly more Irish flavor. And again, we just feel it's a very valuable way to get the word out. One of the advantages that we have in Ireland that you don't have here is that over there they say that you letterbox, that you can put it through their mail slot. And so we largely would do that with a lot of the calendars, especially with that kind of number. We couldn't knock on every door. And I did find sometimes that when you were knocking on someone's door and they were in the middle of fixing their dinner and they came just so that you could hand them a calendar, they didn't appreciate being disturbed for that. So we just started putting them through. But we want to be able, on this one, to have some kind of a response mechanism. The other one didn't really require them to do anything, but we want to be able to offer them a Bible study or a one of the things that Tim feels is appeals to the Irish mind as well, is to offer them that if you want us to pray for you, to call a number or whatever, so that we can try and make contacts that way as well. We would do a lot with home Bible studies in Ireland. It's kind of an interesting situation that we face. Not directly, but I know that there are some people in more traditional circles, shall we say, that feel that home Bible studies are not the right way to do it. That we need to have our gospel meetings in the hall at 6 o'clock on Sunday evening, and that if we don't do that, we're not really being faithful in our presentation of the gospel. And yet it's many of these same people who 50 and 60 years ago would have talked about cottage meetings that they would have had in Ireland where people would have come to their homes. And I think we need to be aware of any barriers that might be there that we can get rid of. And if our hall, our building, our chapel is going to be a barrier, then let's get rid of that barrier and go to where the people are. And one of the ladies in our assembly, she had been trying to invite her friends to some of the gospel outreaches that we had and was never able to get them to come. And so she invited her friends into her home, and we were able for months on end to meet with those ladies and to present the gospel to them week after week after week. They asked questions. She and her sister were very good at the end of the Bible study. That, for the most part, this particular group, the first group that I had in her home, they didn't like to ask questions. They were kind of shy. And while we encouraged them, if they wanted to ask questions or make comments, they could. Most of them were quite shy and just wanted to sit and listen. But as soon as we finished and they were serving the cup of tea, the one sister in particular, she would say, "Now, David, what about this here?" And because it wasn't part of the formal study anymore, then they were able to talk and things came out, and these ladies were able to share their testimony of how the Lord had worked in their heart. And it was, again, the walls were down, people felt at ease, they were able to find out what it is that we really believed. One of the things that I have made a habit when I'm going door to door, very often people want to find out what box to put you in and know whether you're a Jehovah's Witness or what you might be. And so we, as a general rule, we just say that we're Christians, and that doesn't satisfy them. They don't know what that means. So sometimes they'll say, "Are you a born-again Christian?" And I normally don't admit to that until I know what they mean by a born-again Christian. Because if they think that a born-again Christian is some wacko, I don't want to admit to being a wacko. So I think we need to find out. And again, I put it back to them. What do you understand that to be? And work from there. But again, it's getting rid of any barriers that might be there. Audio tapes and videotapes are used either to loan to people or give to people. And that's been a blessing as well. What are the challenges that we face in Ireland today? I think some of the same problems that you're facing here in North America. They say that 15, 20 years ago, Ireland was a very different place than it is today. But Ireland has quickly caught up. The media, all the same programs that you're seeing over here, they're seeing, plus the raunchy English ones as well. And so there's real challenges from the media. Apathy is coming in. People don't care. They don't think that they need anything. Materialism is what they're going after. It used to be that people had a very slow pace of life, particularly in the rural areas. That's still true to a certain extent. But as the pace of life gets busier and busier, people have less and less time for God, as I'm sure you know very well in this area here. And this whole area of hedonism or seeking after pleasure really is so dominant in the culture there as well. And so that's a real challenge. The cultural differences that are there. Again, I know that when I go to people, they know I'm an American. People in America don't think I sound so American, but people in Ireland think I sound very American. And so there are challenges and differences that have to be overcome there. And when we talk about, well, there's actually one of the charismatic churches in Waterford that's known as the American Church. And that's certainly not what we want to be able to be creating where we are. And again, that there are great opportunities that are there. We need help. We, as I say, these short-term teams have been a real help to us, particularly where you're going in and working with an existing work or where there's something to be built into. And I think that we need to capitalize on all of that. And if it's wonderful, as I say, to see people saved, but we need to see them gathered together and built into local churches. And again, all of these things obviously cost money. So But we are thankful that we have the help of the Holy Spirit. And again, as we were saying earlier, he's the one that we need to be looking to and depending upon, that he's the one who's going to be help us to be witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and under the othermost parts of the earth.